story, but get ready. So I get in the car and I plug my phone in and, you know, with the USB port, and it's not working. So I pull it out, and the cord comes out, but the USB thing stays in there. And I'm like, oh, dear. So, Russ, you're going to need to get some tweezers. So then I figure out a different cord, plug it in. All of a sudden, I hear crackling, like something is on fire. And I'm like, oh, my word, I have started their car on fire. And I am frantically looking around. Don't worry, your car's fine. And I'm like frantically looking around, and I realize it's coming from my phone. Well, 24 hours before, I have a foster son, and he was filming his own video with his Mickey, little mouse guy, and he asked me if I could play some fire noises for the soundtrack of his movie. And my phone thought 24 hours later would be a great time to play that on full blast in a car of a friend. And it was terrifying, but I'm happy to say that other than you need tweezers, the car is doing well. But I was like, this is my luck. I just started their car on fire. Great. So that gives you a little bit about me. There you go. Some of you already like me because you're like, she's like me. And some of you are a little scared of me and will never let me borrow your car. And you should pray about that. So I am thrilled to be here. I live in Iowa. I have a husband. We've been married 5 years. We actually honeymooned in Seattle, clearly a honeymoon destination. But I love this whole area. I used to live in northern Idaho and would come this way, especially in August, because I lived in Lewiston-Clarkston area and gets to be well over 100. And so I would come this way. Went to Whidbey Island 18 years ago. I drove on and I was sitting, I think in Coopville, eating a cinnamon roll. And I went, if I ever write a book, I'm going to write it here. Like, what is that? Who says that? And 8 years later, I got a little house on Whidbey, not because I'm rich. Somebody gave it to me to borrow. And I wrote a book on Whidbey Island. And I just keep coming back. So I am always headed this way. And in 2020, in May of 2020, I was laying in bed crying, and my husband's like, oh, what's wrong? Because I'm not a crier. And I was like, I miss Whidbey Island. I need to go to Seattle. And he's like, you're very strange. So you guys out here have my heart. I have been with the Alliance for 10 years. I led their children's ministry. I branched out on my own in 2020 and get to serve in a variety of different ways. I am a foster mom who's very tired. We have a little 9-year-old boy we've had for 18 months, and we adore him and would love to just keep doing fostering forever. He's just a delight. His nickname is Chicken Nugget, so that's his name that he gave us. So, in fact, I was registering for him to school, and you know, I'm filling out his name, and they said any other nicknames he'd like to be known by. And we've had him 24 hours, so I ask him, and he's like, Chicken Nugget, and I'm like, I'm not going to write that down. So his online name is Chicken Nugget because we can't share his face or his name. We're going to talk about kids and families today, but I real quick want you to put your hand in the air. If you have 5 fingers, put them up in the air. If you only have 4, I want to hear the story later, okay? All right, so by the age of 5, a child's lifelong concept of God has been formed. By the age of 5, I'm going to say it again because this is like, what? A child's lifelong concept of God has been formed. That's a big deal. Now, sociologists, psychologists, psychiatrists tell us that then once that's done, it's done. And I always say that they don't know the God that we serve, right? Aren't you so glad we serve a God that says, you know, you're 6 now and I do new things all the time? Because I don't know about you, I love Jesus and God is constantly rewriting the story in my life. But the reality is, that is when a person's brain grows the most and they take in all this information about who God is. And so they're constantly taking in. So did you know that when a little one walks in this church and you go like this, I'm so glad you're here, and you look them in the eye and you get on their level, you actually are the face of Jesus to them because you're seeing them. And don't you want to be a person that emulates Jesus to those around you? So you see them and they begin to go, whoa, because God created their brains and their very beings to be in relationship with him. And we know that sin broke that, right? But he's so good, and so he's constantly drawing them back. And so even that little look in them in the eye, they begin to understand that the God who made them sees them, right? The God who made them comes to their level and meets them where they're at. So it's easy to think, like, I don't really like kids. That's okay. If you don't like kids, please do not serve in the children's ministry. We don't want you there. I feel safe saying that, Leah. but I do believe everybody is called to serve the next generation because it's that important. In Psalm 78, it says this. It says, O my people, listen to my instruction. Open your ears to what I am saying, for I will speak to you in a parable. I will teach you hidden lessons from our past. Stories we have heard and known, stories our ancestors handed down to us. We will not hide these truths from our children. We will tell the next generation about the glorious deeds of the Lord, about his power and his mighty wonders. This is how simple it is. We like to think that it needs to be this really big thing to work with kids, but actually it's you living out your life in front of them loving Jesus and telling them, when's the last time you told someone what God's been doing in your life? Had a girl come up to me in my home church, and she was about 11, and she goes, Miss Mel, I don't think my dad knows Jesus. And her dad was like an elder deacon in the church, and I'm like, I really hope he does. Like, I really feel like he does. And I said, well, what makes you say that? And she goes, he's never told me. And I went, oh, he had never told her his story of how he found Jesus. And what we forget so often in this fast-paced media world, we forget that they can't argue with our own personal story of what Jesus is doing and what he's done. And so may I just encourage you, would you share your story? Tell your kids, tell your grandkids, tell your neighbor. Don't be weird about it, but tell them, because they need to hear about the glorious deeds of the Lord. It goes on to say, don't become like, let me see, let me get it here. So it says each generation should set its hope anew on God, not forgetting his glorious miracles and obeying his commands. Then they will not be like their ancestors, stubborn, rebellious, and unfaithful, refusing to give their hearts to God. It goes on to talk about the warriors of Ephraim, and it says that they did not keep God's covenant because they forgot what he had done. Do you know how a whole generation forgets what God has done? Because we forgot to tell them. We forgot to share that. Let me pray for us really quick. God, we are so thankful for your kindness. We're so thankful for your goodness. And Jesus, we're just really thankful that you're still at work in this world today and that you see us. You get down on our level. You meet us right where we're at and you see us. Would you move amongst us this morning? God, whatever is hindering us, would we push away? And would we hear what you desire? God, I pray that my words would be forgettable, but your words would be memorable. So may we hear from you. In your name we pray. Amen. So we're going to look really quickly at 1 Kings 5. And I think I'm already off my PowerPoint, so whoever's doing that back there, great job. No, we're going here, 2 Kings 5. Might be 1 Kings 5. I think I wrote that down wrong. You'll figure it out. This is the story of Naaman. Do you remember Naaman? Okay, captain of the army, and he gets a disease. What disease is it? Leprosy, okay? He gets leprosy. It says, the king of Aram had great admiration for Naaman, the commander of his army, because through him the Lord had given Aram great victories. But though Naaman was a mighty warrior, he suffered from leprosy. Okay. At this time, Aramean raiders had invaded the land of Israel, and among their captives was a young girl who had been given to Naaman's wife as a maid. So let's stop there. We're really quick to go on to the good part, like when he's healed of leprosy. But let's pause for just a minute, because I just wonder about who this girl is. She doesn't have a name. I wonder who she is. We know that she's an Israelite. And we know that she was taken from her home country. And we know that Naaman is the captain of the guard. Like, he's the guy, the commander of the army. And now she's serving in his household. And I've done a lot of research, and I'll tell you this. Raids in the Bible of other countries were not pretty. They were not nice. They were not well organized. This was like R-rated violence. So here's this little girl who has now been taken captive. Now, I wonder, and I did a bunch of research, and then we just don't know. We don't know her whole story. But we can make some assumptions. She was taken from her family. Most likely, she probably saw major violence right in front of her. Her parents probably died. They were probably killed. So she's taken, she's uprooted from her home country. She's lost her family, and she's just a little girl. and now she's serving. So we don't know what her status was before, but now we know she's just a servant. Talk about culture shock. That is major culture shock. I remember my first children's pastor position was in Orlando, Florida, in the inner city. I came from Iowa, okay? So I was like, I'm going to die. I didn't. But it was so startling. And I wasn't there very long, and then I moved to Idaho, which was the most cross-cultural experience of my life. Because in Idaho, it's open range. So if you hit a cow that's on the road, that is your fault. The cow has a right to be there. And I remember one time I was driving and a cattle truck had tipped over and there were cowboys on horses and they were chasing the cow. And I was like, this is the best place on earth. There are cowboys wrangling things. But I just remember going, I'm so just like discombobulated. One other move I moved from Idaho to Vienna, Austria. Now, my heritage is German. My grandparents are first-generation German. They speak German fluently. My mom speaks German, and I understand a lot of it. And the common phrase I heard growing up in German was stop picking your nose. So that tells you how I was as a child. So, that's what I could say. So I moved to Austria. They speak German there, and I'm like, this is great. I get to my apartment my very first night, and I look out at the city, and I start bawling. And I'm like, I can't do this. Like, I'm a missionary, and I'm like, I can't do it. And I packed up my little suitcase, and I got on the U-Bahn, and I went back to the little old lady's house that had been housing me for a few days, and I knocked on her door crying, and I was like, I just can't. She's like, come on, come in. And she fed me. Turns out I was hangry. She gave me a place to sleep that night, and in the morning, everything looked a little better. But here's the deal. This is just a little girl. In the morning, it's not going to look just a little better. So this little girl, her whole life's been turned upside down. One day, the little girl said to her mistress, there's a whole lot to unpack there because most likely she wasn't allowed to talk. So she's up, but can we just be aware of children and that they talk when they're not supposed to all the time, right? All the time. My little 9-year-old the other day, he looked at somebody and goes, "Woo, they're really large." I'm like, oh, no, we don't say that. They just talk when they're not supposed to. So whether she's just being a kid or I don't know, but she says to her mistress, I wish my master would go to see the prophet in Samaria. He would heal him of his leprosy. Okay, how cool is that? Did research on that. A lot of people go, she was a missionary. I don't think she was a missionary. I really don't. I think she was captive. But there was something about her, something innate within her that knew, in spite of it all, God could do what he said he could do. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm really interested in raising up a generation that believes God will do what he says he will do. That no matter what happens, they still remember who God is. And our world today, I don't know if you've noticed, it is hard. It is really hard to love Jesus in this world. And in fact, more and more we're persecuted. Now that's a really strong word for very small things that happen. But we are not well received because we love Jesus. We would be more received if we flew a certain flag, right? And yet, do we still believe that God is who he says he will be? I love her faith. I love her boldness. And there's something about just innate within her. In spite of it all, this is what I know to be true. When is the last time that in spite of it all, you knew what it was? You knew God would do what he said. When I lived in Idaho, I had a bunch of kids that I worked with, and I had one little girl named Emily. And Emily was just one of the kids that came regularly. We weren't particularly close, but one of the kids that came regularly. A couple years after I left, tragedy happened, and I sent her a little message on Facebook. She was 13. And I said, hey, if you ever want to talk, here's my number. She called me immediately. I was not expecting that. Emily's parents had died the night before. 6 hours before, murder-suicide. Dad had killed mom and then killed himself. And I think I was maybe the second person after the police that she talked to. And she called me and just began to tell me the story. And everything in my brain and heart was going, I should know what to do, right? There should be a formula. In fact, I was teaching a class online about counseling. I was like, okay, I got nothing. And I remember I was out walking. I just sat on this bench and I cried with her. And I realized that was really the best thing I could have done. And at the end of it all, she told me everything, and it was traumatizing in so many ways, for her for sure, but also hard for me. And she goes, "Miss Mel, I don't know why God let this happen, but I know that he loves me." And I was like, "Why? Like, what?" She just knew. She knew. That's the beautiful faith of kids. They just know. And when you capture their heart before the age of 5, when you capture their heart before the age of 12, it becomes this just deep-seated belief. God can do what he says. Now, I know when I talk in a room like this, some of you are thinking of your own kids. Or you're thinking of that one kid, the ones that have walked away. The ones that you go, "But I took them to church. I did everything right." Can I just encourage you? God's not done with their story. He's not done. It says in Proverbs, "Train up a child in the way he should go. When he's old, he won't depart from it." What it doesn't say is give you a date or an age. You don't know. God is faithful. And as much as you grieve and you wonder, God even more grieves and is writing a story for them. So be encouraged by that. But before the age of 5, they begin to get this concept of God. Before the age of 12, kids are still moldable. So they're like, okay, they take in information. After the age of 12, they start to defend what they believe. Before, they're taking it in. They're deciding what they believe. Then they start to defend it. That's called adolescence. Have any of you raised a teenager? Yeah, okay, I felt that in the room here. And you wonder what's wrong with them, right? I was on a plane, this is a long time ago. I'm like reading a book, but I like to eavesdrop. Do you know that? Anyone else do that? No? Just me. Okay. So I'm reading my book, and I hear these two men, they're talking, and all of a sudden the one goes, "I think my kid has a demon." And I was like, "Whoa, it's going to be a good one to listen to." So I was like, "Let me take my AirPod." And he goes, "She used to like me. She used to like me. I'd come in the room. She'd run and see, 'Daddy, Daddy.' Now she hates me. And she just sits in her room. She doesn't want to talk to me. It's a demon." And I was like, and I don't usually, invade other people's conversations. So I was like, "Excuse me, not a demon. How old is she? 14. Like, that's adolescence." It's hard because what they begin to do is defend, and that's actually they're doing their job. That's their job, is to defend what they believe, whether it is good, bad, or ugly. And they're figuring out who they are. So if it feels hard to raise a teenager, or you're looking ahead scared to raise a teenager, you should be. And if it feels hard, it is. And if you look back and go, "We survived," you deserve a cookie today after lunch, okay? Because it's hard. But it matters. What we do, who we are, matters. And when we talk about that, we have to really think about who he is. Because who God is matters. He is aware. Can I just encourage us that he's aware of what's going on in our world today? I have this picture. I think so often we put God in terms that we can understand as humans. So like the pandemic hits, you picture God going, oh boy, I did not see that coming. But that's actually not true, okay, right? God knew, and God wasn't worried. And God was not panicked. God was not masked. He was not quarantined. He was actively at work. He's aware. It says in Psalm 12, 121, 3 through 4, "He will not let you stumble. The one who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel never sleeps or slumbers." Do you think they say that over and over again for a reason? Maybe, just maybe, God knew in 2023 at Arbor Heights Community Church, somebody here, or maybe all of us, wonder, "God, are you even listening? God, do you even see what's going on? He's not sleeping. He's not letting us, he's not just hanging out going, 'Oh no, the world is a mess.' He's aware. He's aware of what's going on." That's good news. He also has not changed. It says in Hebrews that he's the same God yesterday, today, and forever. And we want to think that this is like the hardest time that we've ever been in. But actually, throughout history, there's been hard seasons. Can you imagine a little girl taken from her home? She probably would be delighted to have a pandemic over what happened to her. Our world is hard. And a lot of us want it to get better. And in fact, I'll meet people. I'm like, "How are you doing today?" "Just hoping for glory." "All right, well, you're kind of obnoxious to talk to." Or the ones that are like, "Well, I just know it's going to get better." Here's the reality about our world. It doesn't get better. But God does not change. and our understanding of him gets better, and our relationship with him, our intimacy can get better. But if you read the Bible the way it's supposed to be read, it gets bad, because it says, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. We will have trouble. It will be hard, but he is the same yesterday, today, and forever. The same God of yesterday when the sun was out, which I was like, I need to move to Seattle because it's perfect all the time, clearly. I texted Leah. I was like, mountain's out, because she told me how to act like a local. It was good. I did that. I spoke yesterday. I had 150 people in the room. I was like, mountain's out. Guess what? They loved me. I slayed. They all listened. They clapped. It was beautiful. Same God of yesterday is a God of today. Same God of today is a God of tomorrow. And that's good news. He's at work. He's at work in your life. One of the things when we first got our foster son and started doing foster care, and we're doing foster care out of obedience, not because we think everyone should do foster care. And in fact, I don't think everyone should. I do think everyone should support people doing foster care because it's so hard and we all have a responsibility, right? Not everyone should do it. But one of the things we did was we were like, well, we're going to debrief the day. And so we literally every dinner we have all together, or if it's lunch on the weekend, whatever, we talk. What was the best part of your day? We talk about that. What was the hard part of your day? We talk about that. Sometimes there's a, I'm not going to answer that. Sometimes for us, because we've gotten a really hard email or something has not gone well with our little guy's case, we're like, I can't share that. What made you laugh today? And then we always go, where did you notice God today? And what has become so beautiful about that is we intentionally are looking for God at work in our today. Because what happens too often, we go, hey, what's God teaching you? And you fall back on something God taught you a month ago. Or God taught you 2 months ago. Or God taught you last week. What's God teaching you today? If God's at work and we know he is, he has something for us today. I woke up this morning. I'm trying to get in the habit of going every day, God, what do you have for me today? What do you have for me today? Because here's what I know to be true. God's at work, but I miss him. Not because he's not working, because I'm not paying attention. So he's at work. And I wonder if we're going to raise a generation of kids who are like Naaman servant girl, I just wonder how much of her own personal faith and belief comes into that. I wonder who her parents were. Somehow they trained her, and I don't think it was just enough to take her to church or to the synagogue or to the temple or wherever she went in that time. I don't think that was enough. It must have happened at home. I wonder who her grandparents were. I wonder if they prayed every day for her. I wonder who her aunt and uncle were. I just wonder, because it's going to take all of us. We can't just sit back and go, oh, I'm too old, or kids are too annoying, or whatever. We literally have a biblical mandate to pass on faith to the next generation. God is at work. How you live out your faith matters. How you live out your faith matters. I don't know what this looks like for you, but I do know it means that we need to be actively living out our faith. I don't know what that always looks like. I don't think it's always standing on a corner with a Bible reading loudly. Okay? Because that actually detracts people. I know I flew in really early, whatever day I flew in, Thursday, and I drove up to Everett because I was staying up there. I was seeing friends, and I went and sat in this coffee shop and was just watching basketball because it's my favorite weekend of the year. Can I get a witness? Thank you. And so I'm watching basketball, and I'm waiting for my hotel room to be ready, and I see this gal come in. She's got two bags of stuff she's carrying, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure she's homeless. I hear her talk to the lady behind the counter, and she goes, I just got out of the hospital. I'm really dehydrated. Can I just have some water? And she wasn't being loud or obnoxious, and she sat down kind of next to me. She dug through her bags, and she finds this coffee, and she's like making her own coffee. And I thought, okay, God, what do you have for me today? And God's like, hey, do you see her? I'm like, yeah, I see her too. You should do something. And I was like, that's uncomfortable. I don't think I will. I was like, Arizona's playing, I'm busy. And God's like, no, but if you see her, you do something. I see her. When's the last time someone saw her? So I start, and I've learned through years of being disobedient to God, that I need to be obedient. So I start digging through my backpack, and I find a liquid IV, like a little drink pack, and I find a couple granola bars, and I go over, and I did not go over and say, may the Lord bless and keep you, homeless woman. I didn't do that. I just quietly walked over. I said, hey, I heard you're in the hospital. I'm sorry you don't feel well. Here's some things. Gave her a bottle of water and walked out. Do I tell you that so you clap for me? No. But I just wonder if how we live out our faith matters, and that will often look different than what we want it to look like. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, I'd rather not. My husband and I are partnering with a single mom right now in our town who's very low income, just struggling. She's got four kids. So we call them our bonus girls, and we take them to and from school. And I got to tell you, there's days where it'd be so much easier not to do it. It just would be. It would be so much easier not to do it. And God goes, hey, but do you see her? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, so do I. Do something. You're my hands and feet. But God, I'm a little too tired to be your hands and feet today. And you know what God does? He sustains us and gives us what we need, even when we don't think we can do it. How you live out your faith matters. Do you really believe he is who he says he is? If you do, you got to live it out. What is it? I don't know what that looks like for you. I know what it looks like for me. And I can tell you a number of stories where I'm disobedient. In fact, I was in an airport one time, and I was really working on obedience, which can I just, from like the beginning of time, has not been a gift of mine. So I'm like working on obedience. So I'm like, okay, if I hear God or I feel God saying something, I'm going to do it. And I see this lady cleaning, and she's cleaning the counters. And God was like, go tell her thank you. And I was like, no, I don't want to. I'm very tired. And that's awkward. I think my obedience, the number one thing that stops it is just I feel awkward. Like I'm like, God's like, do it. I'm like, I don't want to. He's like, do it. Fine. So I go over. And I kind of thought like I was going to be this holy thing for her. I was like, I just want you to know we're really thankful you're cleaning. You're doing a great job. And she looks at me. And she's like, okay, whatever. And left. And I was like, how rude. And God was like, that had nothing to do with her and everything to do with you. I wanted you to be obedient. And then I was like, but how rude. Because we often think, well, if I do this, this is what the outcome will be. And God's like, no, I just want you to be obedient without knowing what the outcome will be. I just want you to do what I'm asking you to do, whether you can figure it out or not. I don't know about you guys. I'm a control freak. So I'm like, but God, could you just tell me? And he's like, no. So do you really believe he is who he says he is? And if you do, that should change how you live. Do you share the good and the challenging? Christians, people of faith, we need to share the good and the hard. Why the hard? So I'll tell you right now, we have a generation who does not understand how God can be there when the world looks the way it does. And why that is because we have given them the cleaned up, nice, perfect version of Jesus. And they need to see you when you struggle. They need to know that it's not always perfect. And in fact, it says in 2 Corinthians 4, it talks about us being fragile clay jars. And it actually says that this proves that the great power that we have comes not from ourselves, but from him. So actually, when you come broken and needy and messy, guess what? God shines bright. And you actually show a world that there is a God who loves them no matter what. And our kids and our teenagers and everybody needs to know that God. Do you share the good and the challenging? Share it. One of my favorite things to do with kids is just tell them, like, I'm having a hard day. And I share appropriately for their age, right? I'm having a hard day. And this morning, my phone fell in the toilet. 2 days ago, I thought I started a car on fire. But this is what I know to be true. I always have a but in there. But this is what I know. Good, bad, or ugly, God's with me today. God's present. He sees me. We do that over and over again. My foster son will say, I have the worst life ever. Like he'll get a paper cut. This is the worst day. And we always go, no, it's a bad moment. It's not a bad day. When's the last time you just shared? This is hard. But this is what I know. If you go back to that Naaman servant girl, she knew. And adults, we look at our circumstances and go, you shouldn't love God. And she goes, I love God no matter what. What's wrong with you? So share your good and the challenging. Our younger generations are looking for something. They're looking for someone. I've never, 20 years in ministry this year, this generation wants Jesus. They're looking for him. I was at Powell's Books in Portland. Yes, thank you for the nods. I knew I was going to say that wrong. 2 years ago, I'm down there, and I was like in the Christian section looking for something. My husband and I were there, and there was this group of probably 19-year-olds. And this one, the one kid, he's like, oh, look at C.S. Lewis. And he's pulling out different ones. And I was so beat up from the pandemic. Do you know what I mean? I was just so like, I was tired. Everybody was deconstructing. Everybody seemed to hate the church. Nobody seemed, all of that. And I stopped him and I said, can I ask you a question? And I didn't even care. It was awkward because I was just so like, I said, why do you love Jesus? And he goes, Jesus changed my life. And he goes, I chased after everything else, but I found Jesus. And he goes, it sounds like, he's so great. He goes, it sounds like you could use this book. And he like pulls a book up. I'm like, I'm a pastor. Thank you. Like, yeah, he's like, here. It was the coolest thing. Can I just tell you how cool it was? He's like, nothing competes with Jesus. You guys, we know that. But are we showing that? Are we telling that? Do you maybe need to mute some notifications on your phone? Do you need to maybe turn the TV off and sit with Jesus a little more? Because this generation and our younger generations are longing for something. Why? Because we were created by God, for God, we are always searching for him. Always. And we serve a God who continually draws us to him. He's like, hey, I'm right here. Come on over. They're looking for someone, something. Our younger generations are watching us. Do you know they're watching you? They're not going to look like they're watching you because that wouldn't be cool. They're watching you. And they don't care what you wear. They don't care if you look like a nerd. They don't care. I'm not saying that about anyone in here. Y'all look really good, okay? Maybe Pastor John. I don't know. I won't say that. But they're looking. They're watching because they want to know, are you for real? I was speaking at a camp a number of years ago, and the kids can always ask me a question. And so I have 200 kids in a room. They got to get to know me fast or I'll lose them. So, you know, have you ever ridden a dinosaur? Rude question. Because how old do they think I am, right? What's your favorite color? What are you afraid of? One little guy in the back. Like, and I'm like, I call him. He goes, when is the last time you doubted God and you wanted to walk away? I would rather answer the dinosaur question. And you know what he was saying? This is all great, Miss Mal, but I want to know about you. Do you love Jesus? And when have you last doubted him? And I looked him in the eye and I told him the last time I doubted God. And you could watch his shoulders go down. And I still get goosebumps thinking about it. And he went, oh, okay. And I went, oh, I'm missing the mark. These kids don't need me to be fun. They don't need me to be awesome. They don't need me to dress right. They need me to talk about what Jesus is doing. They're watching me to find out, are you for real? Are you for real? One of the things people love to tell me, I speak all over, they go, I love how authentic you are. I don't do it on purpose. I just want to be the same person I am on Facebook and Instagram as I am in my bedroom in Iowa, in Seattle. I just want to be for real. Broken, needy, but really loving Jesus. Not doing it right all the time. That's what the world wants. They're looking for something. Our younger generation, they need a big God who can handle their big world, big problems, and big faith. Guess what? We have him. We have him. You have him. And I really believe they're looking. And Arbor Heights Community Church, guess what? You're the hope of the world. You have the hope of the world with you. And I know, there's so much going on. But may I just encourage you, turn some stuff off. Take a little bit of time in the morning or in the afternoon. I'm not a morning person. I don't like Jesus in the morning very much. Do it later if you need to. And go, God, what do you want me to do? What do you have for me? Would you get used to hearing God's voice more than you hear the news? Would you be hungry more for God than for what the next thing is? Because that's what changes a generation. You're not too old. You're not too sick. You're not too quiet. You're not too loud. God desires to use you to reach the world around us. That includes our teens. That includes our kids. And we together can do that. Naaman's servant girl was a nobody. She's quickly become one of my favorite in the Bible. And one of the things Leah pointed out probably 3 years ago, she goes, that little girl, she didn't need anyone to help her do that. She didn't have somebody holding her hand to be bold. We can learn a lot from kids who love Jesus. And they need to learn a lot from us as we love Jesus. Does that make sense? Are you motivated? I hope so. If you're not, I'll keep going. I got more to say. I believe God's on the move today. And it might not just happen in the church walls. In fact, it really shouldn't. This should be where you get built up and then you go out. I think I can speak for Pastor John and say that's what we desire. Seattle needs Jesus. I don't know if you've noticed that. Holy cow. There's a lot going on, especially this area of Seattle. It's very unique. It's my first time to West Seattle. It's interesting. I like it. I met the homeless man. Very nice man. Yeah. You have the light of the world. You have what the world is looking for. Make sure you don't keep it hidden. Let me pray for you. God, we're really thankful that you love us. We're really thankful that you take broken vessels and you write new stories. We're really thankful that we don't have to be perfect, cleaned up to be used by you. So God, for whatever you're doing in this room and in our hearts, would we allow you to do it? Would we not get in the way of it? And God, we would ask that we begin to see movement happen. God, we would ask that we begin to see revival happen. And God, we pray for this community that they would begin to see you. May we be exactly what you call us to be. May we be lights in this darkness. And God, for those of us that maybe need to repent for the times that we have cared a whole lot more about what other people are saying, would you forgive us? Would you help us to keep our mind focused on you? So we give ourselves to you. Do what you desire to do in us so that we can be used by you. In your name we pray. Amen.